reach out and touch someone's hand. Towards the one, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being, united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. So let us begin with the purification breaths as given by Hazrat Inayat Khan. I thought that they would be wonderful to begin with since the subject we're dealing with is light and we work with light and life in this breath. Most of you know this practice, but those of you, it's always good for a reminder. We're going to work with the 20 breaths and I'll talk us through. The breath, however, in this instance is on your own natural rhythm, and Murshid gives us the instructions that they are slightly fuller than the natural breath. So while it's on your natural rhythm, it's just a little bit broader and deeper. Okay, so think of it as a kind of internal yoga that we're kind of stretching from the inside and contracting. He gives us this phrase when we breathe in, and we just think the phrase. I inhale divine light and life. And then as we breathe out, it's I radiate divine life and light. That phrase flips. So in, it's light and life, and out, it's life and light. Okay? So we begin first breathing in and out the nose. Sit so you're comfortable. And think of it again, you know, just allowing spaciousness within. And we breathe in at your natural rhythm, in and out the nose. I inhale divine light and life. I radiate divine life and light. The breath changes now. We breathe in through the nose and out through the mouth. In through the nose and out through the mouth. And thinking, again, I inhale, but not only inhale, I'm absorbing, like my whole being is this collector. I'm absorbing all the light and life, and I'm offering it back again with my exhalation. So breathing in through the nose, I inhale divine light and life. And out through the mouth, I radiate divine life and light. In the nose and out the mouth. A little fuller breath. The next breath is in the mouth and out the nose. Breathing in the mouth and out the nose. I inhale divine light and life. I radiate divine life and light. So receiving and giving on each breath, in through the mouth and out through the nose. And the last breath is breathing in through the mouth and out through the mouth. In through the mouth and out through the mouth. Breathing in, I inhale divine light and life. And breathing out, I radiate divine life and light. We have a few other people to join us, so you can make pull a chair up, or you may sit here if you wish. That's available. Thank you. Fine if you feel comfortable, but it's nice if we can all be in a circle. But be comfortable, please. And while things are moving, realize that's also light and life. And we just can continue to breathe, concentrating on life and light. One time my dear friend Comptel Rinpoche told me, I was in his monastery and I was staying with him, and he said, Noria, think of everything that you see and everything you hear as the body of the deity and the mantra of the deity. And you know, that goes for these sounds too. This is all just energy. And it's part of it. We were driving down here, and there was part of the road that was under construction, and it was going, you know, we were on that great thing, and it was for a long ways. And, you know, that could be a little irritating, you might say. But then we started saying, Allah, Allah, Ralla. And you know, you transform it into something beautiful. So all of it is part of the manifestation of that oneness and that beauty. And speaking of beauty, and I think this practice is very much about that in this body of teachings. I just had the beautiful experience of being in the Federation in Berlin, and you know, where all the different Sufi lineages are coming together. But every single teaching wasn't planned, but it all came together, that the whole subject of beauty came forward, and not like, I'm so pretty, you know, it's more like the beauty of the refinement of the personality in the image of the soul, and how do we make, make that beauty that harmonizes with everything around us. So hopefully these teachings will give us a clue. And I will say these teachings were at the very end of this body of teaching by Murshid, there were questions and answers by his students. And so instead of leaving that all for the last day, I've kind of read through the question and answers and tried to find a place that they related directly to the teaching of the day. So we'll have the reflection or the offering by Murshid, and then we'll have some practice that will help emphasize that. And that's another thing from my teachers have taught me in India. It's like the whole vast scripture or sutra or gospel is often encapsulated in a word or in a short phrase. So think that as we do the wazifa together, it's really the embodiment of the whole teaching. So imagine that. We'll be blessed with that, inshallah.
Inshallah.
So this is from Sufi Message, Volume 8. And again, the subject is the privilege of being human. And if you've studied Murshid's teachings, you'll know that he teaches us, as well as many other traditions, that the a very high form of evolution in the evolutionary process is being human. You know, that's where we can actually put the practices into life and into the world. And it's a very, we're blessed, you know. There's those stories about how precious this human life is and how rare, really, it also is. Don't ever forget the rarity of this precious human life. So Murshid says, man, woman, we are likened to light. We are likened to light. And then he describes five things. You know, Murshid is very, if he could be said to be obsessed with anything, first of all, God. But second of all, he had a very strong connection to this number five. So the five elements. He was born on the fifth. He died on the fifth. So this five, think about it, the five-pointed star, he gives teachings. So here he gives us five elements of how we are likened to light. He says the soul, so imagine this manifestation of our being into humanness. The soul is the glow. The soul is the glow. The mind is the flame. The mind is the flame. The body, so if we maybe think about it as the source, we're coming from this one source. So we have this glow, we have the flame, and then the end of the flame is the body. He describes that as being the body. And he says, the heat that comes from the light is the atmosphere. So we hear this in our common language. Oh, they had a real warmth of personality, or they had a coldness about them. So we know this from our experience. The heat comes from the light, and it is the atmosphere, our atmosphere. And last, the number five is the smoke that rises from the light. The smoke that rises from the light in reality doesn't belong to the light. The smoke that rises from the light in reality doesn't belong to the light. It belongs to the fuel. As ignorance is troublesome, so the smoke rising out of the light disturbs it. So these are obscurations. This is another way of saying it. These are our impediments, or it could be our clouds of confusion. Okay, it is obscuring the light. We all have it, we know it. Right? It's good to label it. Oh, that's the confusion. What's behind that? What's behind the light? From the other tradition, Shogyo Trungpa Rinpoche says, when we are meditating, think of the clouds, like our mind is the field of the sky. It's open and spacious. One could say inherently empty. But it is the clouds that obscure the sky or the sun. And we just need to think these are things that are passing. That's the nature of impermanence. But the light is always there. It may be obscured. And we know that. You know, we do have troubles and we have challenges. It's also good to remember that it's passing. I think of St. Teresa the Little Flower. I have this little holy card I carry with me of her, St. Teresa of Lisieux, 24 years old, and died at 24 years old in a very remote village in France. Very remote. And she's one of the great doctors of the Roman Catholic Church. And she said, "Let nothing disturb you. All things are passing. Only God is." I don't know, I have the goosebumps. I just think that is so profound. You know, how beautiful is that? So this is what Murshid's talking about. The smoke that rises out of the light in reality doesn't belong to the light. We misidentify with it sometimes. But it's not the light. It's not who we really are. It belongs to the fuel. As ignorance in man is troublesome, so smoke rising out of the light disturbs it. Just another few sentences and then we're going to do a practice. As I read this morning, as different lights differ in their degrees of radiance, so do different souls. That's not, may I comment on that? Because I don't think that it's about being bright or being light. Sometimes there's a subtlety. It's like the difference between the solar and the lunar light. Some people are more reflective. They may be more veiled. And some people may be very brilliant and radiant. But each one has its purpose. And so does each soul, each being. The substance in every person, however, is the same. It is light. I inhale divine light and life. I radiate divine life and light. The substance of every person, however, is the same. It is light. We read in ancient scriptures that the angels were made of light. It is not of fire that they were made. It is light. Allah hu, Allah hu, Allah hu. But if we ask the question, were the angels made of light and no one else? The answer will be that all, each and every one, were created out of light. Each and every one of us was created out of light. So there's this practice. And I have the typewritten manuscripts of Murshid's practices. It's like a practice manual that he created. And I thought, you know, a lot of times I'll read from Physicians of the Heart, which is such a great blessing for us, isn't it? And there's other interpretations. Murshid Sadi Klotz has a beautiful sort of transliterations and explanations of the sacred names of God. But I wanted to, this class, during our time together, give the very pithy description that Hazrat Anai Khan gave. So, the practice that we'll work with is Yamunawar, and some of you know that practice. Yamunawar. Murshid describes this very simply as, O God, the bestower of divine illumination. O God, the bestower of divine illumination. I mean, how beautiful is that? And this practice can help illuminate our path. can help clear those obscurations, can light us up from the inside, can illuminate the darkness. Disclose to us thy divine light, which is hidden in our soul, that we may know and understand life better. Yamunawar. There it is in the prayers that he gave to us in English. It'd be interesting to look at each line of the prayer and think, what wazifa is represented there? Disclose to us thy divine light, which is hidden in our souls, that we may know and understand life better. Yamunawar. O God, the bestower of divine illumination. Shall we do it together? Yes? So we'll say the prayer aloud with the prefix Yah. O God, O beloved God, O dear one. And then we'll say the word Manawar. And then after we say that 34 times, we'll just whisper, Manawar, Manawar, Manawar. And then after that, we'll sit silently for a few minutes, just concentrating on divine illumination. Disclose to us of thy divine light, which is hidden in our soul, that we may know and understand life better. Yamunawar, 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 Yamunawar. Now just whisper. Divine illumination. Silently breathing in, feeling the light within, let it radiate forth. As the sun at the dawn of the light of creation, feel the vibration of Manawar in your being. Amun hour. So those of us in the immediate circle will be taking up these practices. If something speaks to you from this class, you know, speak to your own initiator. If you feel you want to continue it, make sure that the alchemy is good with your other practices. You know, we don't just haphazardly mix things together, but if it calls you, please respectfully speak to your checkpoint person. Make sure you check in, okay? So question, well, first of all, any questions here or any comments? When this happens at the college, I always tell my students, I must be a really good teacher. You got it. You got it the first time. If there's anything that comes up, it's okay. You can always ask later. Which is also good. I know that, Lou, did you have something? No?
Can you talk just a little bit louder?
Of course.
I appreciate it.
Absolutely. And do you need to move a little? We could switch your seat a little bit.
Sure.
Thank
sure.
you. But I'll do that.
You would trade?
Yes. Yeah. Sometimes. And are you sensitive to one side or another that you need to? Because sometimes hearing can be better on one side or another for a person.
I can hear you so well now.
Is it good? Okay. We know that that's, some people need that. And so please, I'm so glad.
There's about five of us here at camp, too.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So one of Murshid's students asked this question, and get a sense of this whole line of questioning. It's very interesting to me to see the dialogue that happens, and it's also interesting to see how much Murshid answers. You know, it's part of the tradition, and we know that story of Murshid, that when he was meeting with his own Murshid, you know, they met for 6 months or so, and then finally his Murshid started to give him something of an esoteric nature, and he took his pencil out to write it down, and he stopped. So there's something about concentration, first of all, and there's something about the student being ready for the lesson, and that there's an inner preparation, and then perhaps the question comes forth from the student that then can be answered in some manner, maybe not always in words, right? Being sensitive to that and tuning in. But here are these questions, and watch how he answers, and then watch how the follow-up. So it's an interesting little dialogue to experience. So the first question is, what are the means, except concentration and meditation, to develop and strengthen that light in oneself? Except, really? Like, we know that. We know we have to do meditation, concentration, contemplation. But besides that, what else, right? You can kind of... He was very patient. Our Murshid was very patient. He gives the answer. Right living. That's it.
Yeah.
Right living. Yeah. Well, it wasn't enough for them.
Oh.
No.
I didn't understand the definition.
So there's another question, okay? What is right living?
Oh. So here comes the Eightfold Path.
Exactly. It's totally that. And is it doing what everything... Excuse me. What is right living? Is it doing what everything... What is right living? Is it doing what everyone thinks right? It's an interesting question, right? I mean, you know, your mom's all told you, well, if everyone was jumping off a bridge, would you go jump off the bridge, right? It's kind of like that. Like, well, just because everyone's doing it doesn't make it right. So Mirshit's answer is, if a person would have his way of right living, there would be anarchy. So he's giving us a little bit of an indication here that we need to play nice together and get along and think of others, you know, those golden rules, right? So he goes on to say, I would consider right living that which is right for oneself and others. It really is. It is.
It's the golden rule, just restated.
Absolutely. I would consider right living that which is right for oneself and others. If not, those who do good or who do wrong can justify themselves by thinking that what they do is best. What they do is best. For who? Whose lesson is that? A little story, just again from my life, and I'm sure you all have them as well, and feel free to share them. But there's a project that I give my advanced students, and I teach design and visual communications. It's a rather complex problem where they're given four random pieces of information that they write down, and then, okay, now go to the room person across the room and share it. You know, they think initially they're writing them down for themselves. Then they end up sharing, they get four different random. And from that, they have to come up with a concept and write kind of a master plan for a business plan and concept. And then they have to implement that through a series of sort of branding experiences and communication. And at first, they are so frustrated. And they're like, oh, they're confused, they're bewildered. And you know, mine is to sit for about 2 weeks and just keep saying, it's okay, keep working with it. This is not a typical problem solving that you're given. You're going to have to learn to think out. You have to push. You have to do some research. And they flounder. And I suppose it would be like a parent when you see a child doing that and you want to rush in and fix it. But sometimes the fixing is in the not fixing. Then someone really gets courage and strength by going through that. And ours is the difficulty to observe it and just hold the space. And that happens in all kinds of circles too. I remember one of my good friends, Jigme Jatso, who was the chant master at Nechung Monastery, God rest his soul. And he would just see people going through their paces, even at the monastery. It does happen there as well. It's not any, the grass is greener over there, right? They have their community, their issues, their challenges, their work, you know, same, same. Same, same, but different. And he'd just laugh, you know, when something would come up that was a rub for him or for others, and he'd say, it's just karma. It's just karma. It's karma. It's karma. Or Murshid might call it it's the soul of that individual, the journey of that individual's soul.
I have a question.
Yes.
Oh, are you finished with that?
No, go ahead, and I'll go back and reflect on this again. Please, please.
Well, it has to do with smoke and clouds.
Okay.
But when you were saying the smoke is not of the light, it's of the fuel, and then you were talking about the light, we are all made of light, but then those clouds get in the way, people thought about it, whatever. So I'm like, is the smoke the same as the clouds, or is that just...
Yes, I made that analogy. Murshid didn't. I'm sorry if I confused you. He was talking about it as smoke.
Right.
And then I changed the metaphor to another one about the clouds in the sky.
Right. Okay, so it was that. That's what I
yeah. No, it was. That's my contribution. Those errors are my great contribution to this class. No. The clarity is all Murshid. Any confusion, I'll take responsibility for.
Okay. So the smoke is created by the
fuel.
The fuel, and the fuel is
It's a kind of energy. So may I give it through an example? So have, let me see how I can... have any of you ever been angry?
But only sometimes.
Well, you know, there's an energy to that. And some people, we say, we have this expression, they were blinded by their anger. It's like there's a kind of fuel to that. And you'll see it, I mean, again, with children or even with ourselves, we'll use that fuel until it becomes exhausted. Sometimes we turn to tears, the fire element comes down into the water element, and then the next element is complete physical exhaustion, the earth element. So it's a fuel that has to get exhausted sometimes. We can't necessarily stop it. It has its own life, and it has to burn itself out, just like a fire can. So those we could also think of, those things, those lessons we're learning. Perhaps they're the fuel. You know, it's. I remember, again, living at the monastery, my door was right next to the front door of my teacher's home. And people would come all hours of day and night, and sometimes in really strange conditions, like... You know, you kind of wondered what was going on. Sometimes the family members were having to kind of drag him, and you know. And then Rinpoche was always very patient, and he would go into another room that I could see from my room. And people would sometimes be yelling, almost like growling. They'd be like crazy with something. It was in Tibetan, so I didn't always understand, but I knew the energy, right? And by the time they left, they were completely transformed, and they were relaxed. And they were at ease. And that's, you know, I think these high beings have that capacity to also help us transform that energy. And I think that's what Rinpoche did. But that's a kind of fuel that's used for, can be used for transformation. I mean, anger in itself isn't bad. It's how we direct it. But it's also an indication, it's the fire element. And the fire element in the Vedic tradition, which Murshid understood very well, you know, we have the five elements. Again, that number five. First is the earth, and then the water, and then the fire. The fire is the bridge then between... air and ether. So it's the transformative element that takes the more gross matter, material matter, and can transform it. So when we get caught in that realm, we could think of it as energy, pure energy for transformation. Did I answer it or confuse it?
Perfect.
Yeah. And we see that even in natural fire, you know, like when we make a fire, if there are some contaminants in it, it can create smoke and make the there'll be a residual effect from the fire. So thank you for that question. I keep an eye on my time. We finish at, do we know?
3 o'clock.
Okay, so we have time. Any other questions or comments? Does the teaching speak to you in any way?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yes.
So the radiance, I might not have the radiance, it's the soul.
Yes.
The mind is the fire. And then the body.
We have the radiance, the flame, the tip of the flame. And the fuel, is that right? Let's go back, let's read it, because I think that's important. The soul is the glow, the mind, the flame, the end of the flame, the body.
Okay, so that's the fuel, the end of the flame.
Is the body. The heat that comes from the light is the atmosphere. And the smoke that rises out of the light in reality does not belong to the light. Another way of saying this, I can't, I really think that this is so important, what Murshid's saying, because there are these conditions in our life that we misidentify with, and we think that's who we are. Here he's telling us that is not who you are. You're all these other things, and that fuel or those expressions or those manifestations are causes and conditions, but they're not really who you are. And we get misidentified with that. You know, people will even say, oh, you know, my whatever, my cold, my, you know, my house, my husband, my wife, my dog. Those are just other things. Those are not who we are. And my pain, my suffering, my joy, those are also just expressions. They're really, in some ways, fragments.
So then the emotions, where are the emotions?
Well, I think that that's the point. I think he's talking about that.